Sports news, reviews, and interviews. You listen to the Sports Desk here on Sin.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Sin. You're joined by Caleb and Liam, and we were just joking before we came on the show that there is no news to talk about in sport.
Very, very quiet week.
As a matter of fact, it's been one of the the busiest weeks in sport for a long time.
Yes, a very, very disappointing week. My county in Ireland, Tipperary, lost the match to make the finals of the Gaelic football. It's heartbreaking news. I haven't been able to sleep. I've been seeing counsellors and everything, trying to make myself feel better. It's just been terrible. What else has happened?
Well, there's some pretty big news boiling or still going on outside in South Africa. The Australian cricket team kind of roiled up in this ball tampering scandal that's the story that keeps on giving, and it took another turn later on. We're going to talk about that in a second, but coming up also on the show, we're going to be chatting a little bit about my team, the Western Bulldogs. You're quick to criticise the Dogs, so I've come in and I'm going to try and defend us.
I'm criticising the Dogs because I believe the Dogs are much better than what they produced. I'll say, last year, you had a lot of stuff going on. I believe the Dogs are much better than what they performed on the weekend. For a team that won a flag, all that heart you showed in that September run, There was nothing. There was no heart on the weekend with the Doggies.
All right, save it. We'll talk about that shortly. Also on the show, we're going to be talking about the AFL Women's Awards that happened last night, NRL Women's also, and I'm also going to be previewing the AFL match that's happening this Thursday between the Crows and Richmond. But as I said, let's jump into the cricket scandal that's unfolding.
Yes.
And the latest news to come out of that is that David Warner, Stephen Smith and Cameron Bancroft are heading back to Australia now. And replacing them is, well, heading over on a plane is Glenn Maxwell. There is Matt Renshaw.
Which the Renshaw movement has worked.
And also, we've also got Joe Burns. So, very interesting. Were there any players that they should have picked over those three, or was that pretty expected?
Really can't. Since none of them were bowlers, I must say Aston Agar, but none of them were bowlers. So.
It was no bowlers outside the team, so it makes sense, I suppose. I mean, Glenn Maxwell's known to bowl some off-spinners, but more in the short form.
Yeah. They might use either Maxwell or, well, Hanscom's still over there.
True. I forgot about Hanscom.
But Maxwell, or they could use Mitch Marsh more of a batsman and not bowl them at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I said this on Monday, which kind of makes my joke earlier kind of irrelevant with the whole what's happening, since I've already done a show this week. But still, this fourth test, no one cares about the result.
Really? I reckon if Australia comes out and wins, what a statement that'd be. It'd almost be, I think that'd be Australia's biggest goal. If Cricket Australia, James Sutherland, if Australia can win this next test, that'll be a huge statement coming from Australia to say that we're bigger than all of this. We're bigger and better than all of this.
And I did say this as well. I did feel so sorry for the guy, the social media guy for the Australian cricket team, because during that last day, posting updates like, Hazelwood got a wicket. No one cared Hazelwood got a wicket.
Yeah.
I even looked at comments. Yeah, he probably tampered with the ball. He's a cheat. But he, you know, he's doing his job. Oh, what? Warner and Bancroft went out the bat. And it's like, oh, God, no.
I'd love to know what your thoughts are, because it seems like as this news story progresses, the public's perception has shifted a bit. I know that initially when it first came out, it was widespread condemnation. I think there was...
Everyone wanted their heads.
Wanted their heads. It was polls going around that Steve Smith should stand down immediately as captain. And I'm not saying that was the wrong decision, but it just seems like as this story has progressed, it's become more and more news stories saying that it's a bit of an overreaction, and people are saying that people need to calm down. A lot of people suggesting that ball tampering isn't a big of a deal as it is being made out. So where do you stand on it?
Ben said it perfectly on Monday, and you disagree, but everyone does it. There is no way that the Australian cricket team was like, this third test, day three, this third test against South Africa, we're going to cheat for the very first time. It's not the first time Smith, Warner...
Does that make it any worse, though, that it's not the first time?
I believe everyone cheats in every sport.
Really?
I'll go back to 2012. Essendon got caught blood doping.
And they got punished?
Jared Ruffhead didn't get caught blood doping. Not saying Jared Ruffhead blood doped at all. I'm not saying that. But example, Jared Ruffhead
very
did.
Careful.
And he didn't get caught, but Essendon got caught. But
You can't say that, though, because we know that Essendon have blood doped. We don't know that anyone else in the AFL has blood doped.
My point is that someone probably did and didn't get caught while Essendon did get caught.
We don't know that, though. We have no idea. We can't say that. I don't think... I understand what you're saying, but I don't think it's fair to say, oh, well, one person's done it. Then everyone must do it. I, in my opinion, I think this is poor from the Australian cricket team. And while there is history of there is history of ball tampering. I don't think that this is. I don't think this is like our first view of like the first open to like folding back the curtain and seeing something that happens all the time. I think this was the Australians were pushing the line a fair bit with their sledging. They were trying to see where the line stood, and then they kept going and they kept going. And I think this was the last step in what was a build up of win at all costs mentality, which has been thrown around a fair bit.
So you're saying you do believe this is the first time?
Not the first time. I think, I don't know. I think it is, like, obviously Faf du Plessis had the breath mints and then got done for that. There was Saheed Afridi for Pakistan. He got done for biting the ball.
I'm talking about for Australia.
Oh, for Australia? It depends how you define ball tampering, doesn't it? Because players throw the ball into the dirt when they're fielding it.
Mm. Which is until the umpire tells them to stop, of course.
Correct. And then there might be other little things that they do, such as super glue on their shorts or something like that to help it rub, deteriorate the ball. But I do think that planning at a lunchtime session to take tape out and grab granules off the pitch and then use that to rough up the ball, it's premeditated. They knew what they were doing was against the rules. It came from the leadership team, and that's probably where all the issues come from. I think it's one thing for a fielder to pick up the ball and throw it into the dirt and be like, oh, well, you can't really prove that I was ball tampering. But a piece of sticky tape with granules of the pitch attached to it, it's very hard to justify in any way, in my opinion.
And what about how many players? Well, I agree. I think that everyone knew, 100%, everyone involved.
All 11 Australian cricket players? Yeah.
Well, maybe not all the Australian cricket players. Like, I think all the important ones did.
Mm. So the five in the leadership team, you had Nathan Lyon was in there, Josh Hazlewood, Mitch Stark, David Warner, Steve Smith, and in the press, obviously, Steve Smith said that it was a discussion between the leadership team and Bancroft was nearby.
I would say it would have to be, the bowlers would have to know, considering it's bowling. Ball,
correct.
Because they'll have to know the ball was going to be tampered with. And well, if we make it like no one knew, the bowler bowling that over with the ball would have had to know.
Correct.
Even if it was like a second beforehand.
Yeah, he's getting the ball given to him and he's looking at it thinking, why is there all these scuffs on there?
Yeah, pretty much. So what do you think? The three main ones now have gone home, Smith, Warner and
Bancroft. Yeah.
Do you think any of them will play again?
I think Smith will come back. As I was saying before, it seems like the more that this story unfolds, the more and more the public is almost siding with the Australians, if you get what I mean. And I think in a year's time, 6 months' time, we will look back on this and I almost think it will be like a memory. It'll be like, oh, that happened. I forgot that happened. Because there's this big gap. There's a few World Cups coming up, but
I'm trying to find the next Test series, and I cannot find it at all.
Well, what about by next Australian summer? Let's say, hypothetically, Steve Smith and David Warner are serving bans. Maybe Bancroft is as well. We play whoever we play, and we have a good series. Then the series after, Steve Smith's welcome back, and he makes runs. People will be very quick to forgive him. It's a little bit of a blight on his history because he was touted as the best since Bradman. I'm obviously talking about Steve Smith here. And when they look back, people might say, well, yeah, he was the best since Bradman, but he was caught up in that scandal.
I 100% agree. I 100% agree with you with that. There's two situations going to occur.
Mm.
They're going to miss out. Actually, three. Sorry, there's three.
Okay.
They're going to miss out, and Australia gets smashed. Oh, you should have brought him back. You know, we're overreacting. We bring him back. They don't perform. Oh, they should have stayed suspended. You know, they cheat. You bring him back and perform. You know, right decision. Good on ya. This is, you know, they've learned their lesson.
Yeah.
So there's only three options how that's going to play out.
Yeah. And I think the way I see it playing out is I see David Warner. He's 31 years old. I think he'll serve.
Not the most popular guy in the world.
No, I. In the lead up with the sledging as well, I think he lost a lot of fans through that.
And it's been reported that, yeah, he had a bit of a falling out with the bowlers.
Yeah, that was an interesting one. He was kicked out of the WhatsApp group, which is.
And that's just terrible. Bizarre. You don't get kicked out of the WhatsApp group.
So for me, I reckon he may serve a bit of a ban from Cricket Australia. And then he'll be given the opportunity to work back into the team. Whether or not he gets back into the team, I think we may have found a replacement opener for him by then. Joe Burns might come in, make runs.
Renshaw's
the other one, correct? Yeah. What about? Do you think Warner will play another test?
I don't think. I think everyone's. I think even the cricket fans are, with Smith. Smith will. I wouldn't say he'll be as beloved.
Mm.
As he was heading out the Ashes. But people want to see Smith back. People probably want to see Bancroft back. But I think even Australian fans are getting sick of Warner.
Yeah.
It's just nothing he's doing now. Like I've been saying for a while, I think I even said on our first show here, that he's been out of form for like the last year. Mm. I think he's got a century against England, but you know, he underperformed the one days. I don't even think he played the 2020s. If he did, he was nowhere to be seen.
He did. He played just before the tests, and he underperformed. Yeah, he was the captain and struggled to really perform. But tests, I think they'll give him a chance to work his way back into the team after serving however long of a ban he serves. Mm. This is all, obviously, if he gets a ban.
Well, we know it's a ban for the South Africa last
test. We know
it's
one test, yeah.
Which also, with Steve Smith, and we both agree that he will play again,
mm-hmm.
Will he be captain? If not, who? Because Tim Payne's captain today, but I don't see him. You know, you can't play your first. Yeah. I think your first test only a few months ago.
How much of a difference does 6 months change? When he was first announced into the Ashes team, there was people. Yeah. They couldn't believe it. They were thinking, "What is going on, Tim Payne? Who is this guy?" 6 months later, he's
test captain
of the 46 team.
46 test captain.
Obviously, under sensational circumstances, yes. But for me, I think I would lean towards Cummins. I think Cummins will eventually take over the realm. I don't think he's ready yet, but I think it's time that Australia had a bowling captain.
Mm. That's odd then, because Cummins might have been a part of the situation, because it's going to play out for the next few months. You know, it will come out that all these players were a part of it, all these players weren't a part of it. There'll be a lying scandal where someone's like, no, I wasn't, but then was. It's going to play out like a soap opera, and we pretty much can write the script how it's going to.
Then who do you see as? Do you see a batsman taking over?
It's really hard.
Yeah, the other option is Mitch Marsh. A lot of people are saying Mitch Marsh
but
is the one.
He hasn't proved, like, he's been good. He's been solid since he's come back. Hasn't proved himself. Sure, Marsh is the same.
Mm. Mitch Marsh has captained Western Australia, so he's got history. So he's why that's the obvious choice.
But he's also a bowler.
Yeah, bowler and batter, so all-rounder. Steve Smith was technically an all-rounder, just never bowled himself.
I was just saying that when everything comes out, it's going to be bowlers were part of it or only... But I think Cummins would be, if anyone, Cummins,
yep.
Stark or Hazelwood.
It's funny because only a few weeks ago, I think we were speaking in hypotheticals, we were saying Cummins could be the next Australian captain, talking five, 6 years down the track.
Yes, when the first article about Mitch Marsh coming out, we kind of took a bit of a joke, kind of took the piss out of it.
Now it's come.
Now it could be reality.
Yeah, maybe the person who wrote that article has predicted this whole saga
unfolding. Maybe he handed Bancroft the tape. You know, he's like, "Hey, yeah. I've got money on this. Let's just."
What are your thoughts? Oh, sorry.
I think I'm about to ask the same question.
Darren Lehman, because Cricket Australia have stood by Darren Lehman. Not stood down, they've stood by him and they've chosen to keep him as the head coach. Steve Smith has said that he reckons that Darren Lehman had no involvement whatsoever, that it was purely the players in the leadership group. Darren Lehman didn't know. Do we believe this? Do we buy into it? Or
well, if he knew nothing about it, he's a terrible coach. If I was a coach and my players did this under kind of like Melbourne quitting on their, you know, gone behind the back for the training camp, you'd be annoyed at your players. You lose faith in your players for going behind your back. Either way, it's not a good look for Lehman or the Australian cricket team.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Lehman probably knew in some form, and if he didn't, then what is the coach actually doing? Because I don't understand. If you're the coach of a national cricket team, you'd almost certainly know something was happening, and... You know, what do they do at lunch otherwise? Do they just all go off into their own little groups and whisper amongst each other without Darren Lehman's knowing? So, very weird. As we said earlier, we're going to be chatting about the Western Bulldogs just after this song.
So, do you think he should get sacked or not?
It's a tough one. Yes, I think he should.
I'm a
community radio broadcaster, so I don't have a whole lot of expert opinion, but I'd love to see someone like Darren Gillespie or Justin Langer come into the side and coach him.
I know we said this before. I actually said this to you off air, and I'm going to help him back this again. But the Essendon saga, bringing James Hurd back in 2015 was a terrible decision.
Mm.
He should have just stayed away from footy altogether after that. I think the same with Lehman, because like I said, there's going to be more coming out of this than just Smith, Warner and Bancroft done it. It's going to be so much more.
Well, we've already seen more and more developments since. So this morning, the news article that came out was that Warner was the central figure of the whole saga. So I agree. As the longer this plays out, the more we're going to find out about other things that might have gone on or different different tactics that were employed by
and
players.
Maybe past tactics and all that. It is not over by a long shot.
We want to talk about positive news, so let's just jump straight into it. Western Bulldogs, AFL Women's Grand Final Champions. So there you go, that's the positive news.
Positive news if your name's not Ben.
That's true. Ben, our producer, who barracks for the Lions. Bad luck, mate. Maybe next year when you make it to your third Grand Final in a row.
lose 3 by 6 points. That's more interesting than you winning one, actually.
Nah. Great, no way is more interesting. Doggies, what a story, history. Hey? What a story.
It was.
And you can hear my bias, obviously, seeping through here. And for those that don't know, big Western Bulldogs
I heard
fan.
Your bias a bit earlier when I told you about my not likeness of the entire Western Bulldogs team getting up and celebrating with the cup while the players were on stage.
I don't know. Unless the players come out and say, we don't like this, then they're allowed to do it. I mean, the Dogs were riddled with so many injuries this year that I'm sure a lot of the girls would say they all played a part in it.
Everyone plays a part in the premiership. Everyone from the guy who doesn't play a game, you know, he's the one practicing on the full back as a, you know, forward who will never play a game. Everyone has a part in it. But I know Sam Newman said last year he criticised the Bob Murphy situation.
And Sam Newman, why are we even bringing him up on this show?
At first, I disagreed with Sam Newman. I was like, no, it was a great thing. It was fantastic.
We've reached new lows if we're...
Then I thought about it more. I enjoyed the cup. It was, you know, it will go down in history as one of the best moments, you know, calling up Bob Murphy and doing that thing. But then everything afterwards.
What was afterwards?
Him doing the lap of honour.
Bob Murphy doing the lap of honour?
Yes, he should not have done the lap of honour.
Are you serious right now?
I am 100% dead serious.
You're telling me that Bob Murphy did not deserve to do a lap of honour after the grand final, which he played an instrumental role in?
Yep, 100%. So if Freo win the flag this year, do you want to call up retired Matthew Pavage?
No, because he wasn't on the list. He wasn't a captain for the club.
He was a captain.
He was a captain, and Bob Murphy was still the captain of the club.
You know, if Fife does his knee and Freo wins the flag, Fife can stay at home.
Well, that's... I would argue that Fife has a right to get up there as well. If he still has this... I mean, Bob Murphy was such a... We're talking about 2016, but Bob Murphy was this influential leader all throughout the year. He still was involved in the club. I have no doubt that he would have mentored a lot of the players and ridden the wave of that 2016 grand final.
Matthew Prime stayed on the field. He was there in 2004. He was there. He, you know, celebrated.
So what was the story with Matthew Prime? So
he did
injured.
His knee as well, the player captain. Warren Treadway was captain.
Yep.
Did his knee. The uncle of mine, Keith Gregg, when he was injured in 77, both grand finals, he was let the premiership captain celebrate, even though he was the captain.
Easton Wood still celebrated. Easton Wood got up there, and then he called Bob.
But these captains let the other captains have the spotlight. I get the cup. The cup is fine because of all his hard work and dedication to the club.
Bob Murphy loved the club, and this was obviously a huge thing. And I would argue that if Fremantle won the flag this year, that Matthew Pavlich, Nat Fyfe would be over the moon, and they would no doubt they would jump in on those celebrations as well.
And that's also a good thing. I agree with the cup because what Bob Murphy did with the club. Fyfe's 26, he's played 140 games.
Mm.
He's the Brownlow medalist and the current captain. But what has he done for the club? He's done
nothing. Bob Murphy?
No, Fyfe.
Oh, Fyfe, pardon me.
What has he done? Same thing with Heppel. If Heppel got injured, Essendon won the flag.
Yeah.
What has Heppel done? I do get the Bob Murphy.
I would
argue
they've done a fair bit for the club. They've captained their club. That's a huge honour for the club.
There's been four premiership captains, well, premiership standing captains in AFL history, and only one did the lap of honour, which is Bob Murphy.
And good on him. And there should be more. And if there's only one, you'd pick Bob Murphy because he was the best captain.
Well, I know. I think AFL Team of the Century, Keith Gregg, was probably a better captain.
Oh, well, that's his choice not to do the lap of honour. Bob Murphy, good on him for doing the lap of honour.
We could debate this all day. But let's get to the main issue at hand with the Doggies on the weekend. And as one-eyed doggy supporter you might be.
I can't look past the fact that we looked terrible. Yeah, we looked awful. Our midfield was okay, but both ends of the ground, the defence looked shot. We were undermanned. We were undersized. Jeremy Cameron kicked 6 on us. Could have kicked 8.
Like I've said, there's a few players like Doggies. I thought to myself, a Norm Smith back there would have helped. Mm-hmm. And maybe if they had an All-Australian defender in their list.
Jason Johannesson played in the defence.
No, he played forward.
He played a little bit of defence.
But an All-Australian, and your captain getting 7 disposals, and I rate Eason Wood as one of the best defenders in the AFL. Once he went down last year against Brisbane, and I said this straight away, the Doggy season's over. If Wood doesn't come back, the Doggy season was over, and I think you lost every game once he went out. That's how important Eason Wood is to your team and to your back line. So you play him forward.
Yeah, I think the idea of playing Eason Wood as a forward would have worked if we had Dale Morris, if we had Marcus Adams, if we had Lewis Young. We have these stocks in defence, and at the moment we just don't. They're all injured. So, I mean, I like the idea of him becoming this versatile forward back swingman because he is a fantastic mark of the footy. But I think, and Beveridge has even hinted at this a fair bit in his latest press conference, that Eason Wood is probably going to shift back into the back line. And that's where his strength is. Oh, he's an All-Australian defender.
Credit to Beveridge. He has pretty much made a mistake with bringing Wood to the forward line. But yeah, I've been calling it for a couple of weeks now since the JLT series. I'm not even a premiership coach, so, you know.
That's the other point, though. A lot of people are quick to criticise Bevo and his decision, and sometimes it is important to remember that, for me, especially as a fan, that I am purely a fan, and sometimes I like to just put my faith in Bevo, because in Bevo we do trust, and I like to think that Bevo knows a little bit more about footy than I do. So if he wants to, if he's seen something in Eason Wood, then I'm all for it.
But it turns out he was a bit blinded by that, and it was a terrible decision.
Well, but time will tell. It's only round one. Round one hysteria has blown up in the Sin Studios.
I've said this because I care about the Doggies, and I do say they. I always say they're my second favourite team. And I love this. I always say they're my second favourite team, but I would never go for them. They're just always my second favourite team.
I've heard that from a few fans.
It's a weird thing.
Let me ask you this. If Eason Wood this week, they're playing against the Eagles, who they have a pretty strong back line. They've got McGovern, they've got Barass.
Well, McGovern wants a big performance after getting absolutely dominated by Buddy.
Let's say that Eason Wood kicks 3, 4, 5 goals this weekend. Will they persist with him in the back line, or will they put him in the forward line? Will they keep him there? Will there be people that still... Will Bevo then say, well, I told you so?
Well, what if... Who would Wood play on?
Who would Wood play on?
In the back line.
So as a defender?
Yeah.
I would say they've got Liam Ryan. He's probably their key forward at the moment.
Yeah, we'll just say Liam Ryan. Mm. So if Wood kicks 5 goals, but Liam Ryan kicks 6, where would you put him?
I see. Yeah. Interesting point. I almost reckon that Eason Wood plays his best footy when he isn't held accountable to an attacker. I think Eason Wood is the player, which the Dogs do not have this luxury at the moment.
Yeah, but crazy
when Dale Morris, when Dale Morris can take your Josh Kennedy, your number one, and then you've got other defenders around him that can help out, and then that frees up your Jason Johannesson, that frees up your Eason Wood, and no one's looking at them saying, well, this player kicked this many. They're instead looking at the intercept marks, the metres gained, the effectiveness off halfback.
And not just another issue, this is more of a sad issue, but Libber
has done his second ACL. The other knee.
And Crozier has done his knee as well, and he'll be out for a while.
Yeah, about a month or so, they reckon, for Crozier.
So Crozier defender's now out. Marcus Adam and Dale Morris are all out. And so I think either Wood or Johansson has to go back to the back line now. There's really... You're running out of defenders, you Doggies.
That's it. I think it'll be interesting to see where they get their defenders from. I think at the moment our key defenders are, you've got Zane Cordy. It's probably one of, and then you've got Fletcher Roberts, who's done okay. He didn't play all that well on the weekend, but we know from the 2016 final series he did a good job, so that's possible. You know who we would love to have in the team right now? It's Joel Hamling.
Oh, the guy that actually didn't play on the weekend.
The guy that didn't play on the
weekend. Yeah, Ross Lyon left me out the team. Well, he was a bit injured. That's most of the reason why. But, yeah, I was thinking about that. He would have been handy.
Would have been very handy. We lack that lockdown defender again. Aaron Norton's the young guy that's playing for the Dogs. We recruited him as a bit more of an Eastern Wood intercept marker, and now we're playing him as this lockdown defender
on
Jeremy Cameron's.
He's quite tall.
He's tall, but he was all of his draft buyers and stats were saying intercept mark king. Not less of a spoil and take one on one with a forward.
Yeah. The positive out of your game with GWS, I think, was Tim English.
Yeah.
Like he played a handful of games last year, but never really set the world alight. But he played phenomenal.
Mm.
He's a very skinny kid. Very skinny.
But at the same time, he's put on a lot of muscle. When we drafted him, he was beanstalk thin. And I don't know if he's been hitting the gym with Kieran Collins or something like that, one of the other big boys at the Dogs. But, yeah, he's thickening out.
That's always good to see.
Very good.
And he looks like he can take some marks to kick goals, which, is the future of footy. Ruckmans now have to kick goals.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be no full-time ruckman.
Yeah.
The next few years, they're going to be... You're probably still going to have like three forwards and two of them are ruckmen.
Yeah.
And they'll just rotate.
I've got an interesting one for you.
Interesting one.
So Sam Landsberger from Fox Footy, he tweeted this. The Western Bulldogs went down by 82 points and that was our biggest ever loss under Premiership coach Luke Beveridge. And it was the club's equal worst defeat since round 21 in 2012. So it is, while I am optimistic in saying that it's round one hysteria, I'm also aware that this is taking us back to Brendan McCartney days where...
Oh, yeah, he was your coach.
He was our coach. Forgot about that. We would lose these kind of games, and as a fan, we would just jump on anything that was an excuse. And I think the excuse that a lot of the Doggies people were saying was that we were the youngest list on the weekend.
So this reminds me of last season. Freo lost Pro Adelaide by like 82 points. It was, this is Ross Lyon's biggest loss. We got smashed by 100 points three times that season.
Wow.
So maybe it's not a good idea to come out and say it's the biggest loss under a coach.
That's it. Then on the other side of the coin, GWS, last year, they...
GWS played a perfect game.
They played a fantastic game.
I looked over the game, looked over the stats. I could not spot one thing wrong with GWS's performance.
Mm.
Maybe the fact that Cameron couldn't kick 7 goals and tie the GWS record. I think he kicked like 3 points in a row in the last quarter. But apart from that, GWS had a perfect game against the Doggies. But Canberra's their home stadium.
Yeah, it is. They're very good there, and they always seem to sell out the crowd. Look, I could talk about the Western Bulldogs for hours, and there's a reason I could, because I've set up a podcast for it. It's called the Kennel Cough Podcast, and I'd be crazy not to promote it on this show. So if you also like to listen to me being incredibly optimistic about the Western Bulldogs...
You can be more one-eyed than that.
Be one-eyed. It's on iTunes, and it's hosted by with myself and Neve. So Neve's on Fridays for Sports Desk. It's a cracking show. We have a lot of fun. Find it on iTunes, whatever you...
So were you tough on the Doggies this week, or were you optimistic?
We just turned a blind to talk about the AFL Women's.
Oh, wow.
we talked about it for a while. More so pretty much what we said today, really.
Just breaking football news here. Breaking news on the Sport Desk. That's how good we are.
Whoa.
Essendon coach John Worsfold has extended his contract 2 years.
Oh, there you go.
Breaking news.
That was pretty expected, but that's great news for Woosha.
Which I'm going to discuss on my Essendon podcast, the Flying Up podcast, with me and Andrew, who does Get Cereal.
Oh, that's awesome. Last night, there was the AFL Women's Awards. A few awards. Emma Carney obviously taking out the main award. She's the top dog, and she's taking out the best and fairest. She beat, I think it was Chloe Malloy, maybe two.
There was three.
Okay.
Well, she took out, she won with 14 votes, and the second place came ninth.
So, she beat Courtney Gumm, Chloe Malloy, and Dana Hooker on 9 votes.
So, I was close. I had Dana Hooker winning in my personal votes by a vote over Emma Carney and Courtney Gumm.
Yeah.
Courtney Gumm took out the MVP.
Yeah.
And didn't win the...
It was funny. She didn't win the best first-year player. Yes. Chloe Malloy took that out, which is fair because Chloe Malloy had an outstanding season, but it's just the AFL Players Association MVP award went to a first-year player, which was Courtney Gumm. So.
And not just a first-year player. I know this is going to sound weird, But in terms of especially football, a 36-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, it's an amazing story, isn't it? She's come into the team, GWS last year, Wooden Spooners, and just lifted them to almost making a grand final. And they were probably that last game, they sort of tailed off, but they... against the Lions, but they were full steam ahead, and they were looking very likely to make the grand final.
Yeah, they were. Not just that, you've got the women's All-Australian team, and I'll go through. We'll start off with the back line. You've got Chloe Malloy, of course, who also took out the Rising Stars, we said.
Yep.
Kate Lutkins.
Yep, played an outstanding grand final for the Brisbane Lions.
From the Bulldogs, you've got Hannah Scott.
Yep.
From the Adelaide Crows, also the captain.
Mm-hmm.
Of both the Australian and the Adelaide Crows, Chelsea Randall,
yep.
Who I thought had a fantastic season. She did finish equal third with six votes. Fair enough. I think she played fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Females, Ebony Antonio.
Yep.
GWS is in the midfield now. GWS is Erin McConnon.
Yep.
Then the MVP, Courtney Gum. Melbourne captain, Daisy Pearce, who I think... There's two I'm not sure about. Daisy Pearce is one of them. I think she had an okay season, but not a great season.
Okay, fair enough.
But then Fremantle's Dana Hooker, who mm-hmm. I think had a great season. Emma Carney, who I think was also stiff to miss out on the grand final best on ground award.
Yep.
I don't know about you. I don't know who you thought should have won it, but...
I thought Mia Conti played... Well, she didn't... On the stats sheet, she didn't fill it out as much as someone else, man, like Carney, but... I thought she, whenever she picked up the ball, she looked poised. She looked like she had that, you know, the cliche of a basketballer, having that extra 2-3 seconds of space. On a wet day on Saturday, that's what the Dogs need the most. And I think that's why Conti eventually got the Rising Star Award.
Fair point.
who would you give it?
I think Emma Carney.
Okay. She kicked that late goal, which was...
Yeah, late goal on the third. Set things up. And as well had the most touches. But... All the awards in footy is a midfield award, so it's good to see. Yeah, not the big names get it.
True.
I wouldn't mind seeing a forward win a Brownlow or Backman win a Brownlow. I said this on Monday. Backman need more love.
Well, Buddy might win the Brownlow if he keeps kicking 8 goals a game. So
yeah, you actually saw on Wikipedia. Buddy Franklin is now the owner of Perth Stadium,
so good.
Which is fair enough.
Yeah.
Alicia Eva as well. Again, fantastic choice for All Australian.
Yeah.
Elise O'Day. Sabrina Frederick-Truob, who didn't have the best grand final, but granted, it wasn't the best conditions for her at all.
No.
Brooke Lachlan, a two-game wonder, the winning goal against Melbourne and the
still
seven
won
goals
the,
against
Carlton. Still won the most goals?
Yep.
Kicked the most goals, pardon me.
Oh, yeah, if you kick the most goals, you deserve to make it every year, 100%. Jess Wushner,
yep.
Who almost got the Brisbane over the line with a phenomenal last quarter.
She did play very well in that last quarter.
And Christian Bernardi, can't argue with that as well. On the bench, you got Emily Bates from Brisbane, Karen Packman from Melbourne, Meg Downey from Melbourne, Taylor Harris was also the other one I thought was a bit iffy. She made it last year. She deserved to make more this year than she did last year.
Mm.
But she still hasn't done enough to, I think, deserve to make it.
I don't know. The games that I saw from Carlton this year, I thought she looked like the one player that could push Carlton to back to where they were. She took some fantastic marks throughout the season. So I get what you mean. She wasn't... She came with this massive expectation because she was the prize recruit that Carlton got from Brisbane. But, I reckon on the bench is probably accurate, in my opinion.
Now, there's a player from Melbourne who I think deserves to make it more than Taylor Harris did. And if I can just... her name has slipped my mind, and I'll quickly get up for you now.
Melbourne forward?
Yes.
I think I know which one you mean, and I've forgotten her name.
I'll just quickly get up here. Quick stats. Tegan Cunningham, I think, deserved to make it much more than Taylor Harris. I think she was absolutely stiff to miss out. And Ali Blackburn, the premiership captain for the Western Bulldogs.
I thought that was nice that she's in there. She had a pretty good year.
She had a phenomenal year. Well, she's had the phenomenal 2 years. She's been... Like I said, the longest-serving captain of the Western Bulldogs team, actually, as well.
yeah, you're right.
And I think I did say this, I think, on Friday. I made a brief cameo on the Friday Sports Desk.
Mm.
She's, I think, the youngest premiership captain in history.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think
she's quite young, yeah.
I think Chris Judd was also 23 when he won for West Coast in 2006.
23, my goodness.
Yeah. You know, I'm 22. What am I doing with my life?
too good. Yeah, so Ellie Blackburn, 1994. So she's only aged 23. It's outstanding for the Dogs. Even there's a lot of talk about Emma Carney going over to North Melbourne.
Yes, she with Bree Davies.
She has her ties with Melbourne Uni in the VFL. So I think it's pretty much almost certain that Melbourne Uni will be affiliated with North Melbourne as their feeder reserves team.
Not Tasmania, isn't it? I know they have a Tasmania pool.
Yes, the Tasmania, but there is an affiliation with Melbourne Uni, so that's where the link has come from. And I think North Melbourne have actually explicitly said Emma Carney is on the top of their to-get list, or wish list, sorry.
God, so, wouldn't you love if, no matter what gender, North Melbourne just can't get a key player?
Yeah, exactly.
That would make life perfect.
Well, that's it. Maybe she does a Dusty Martin and she chooses to stay with the Dogs because of...
Well, she's a premiership player now,
Premiership player. She won the best and fairest. So she's in very similar shoes to Dusty.
Also, another awards. Newman won Goal of the Year against Adelaide in round two, as well as Taylor Harris won Mark of the Year in round one against Collingwood.
There you go.
Tomorrow night at Adelaide Oval, you got the grand final rematch between the Richmond Tigers and the Adelaide Crows. Walker might not be able to play. Tom Lynch, Brody Smith isn't playing anyways. Brad Crouch, all these, so a lot of players still out for Adelaide, where Richmond,
Richmond have got Hooley back, so
and Trent
Hooley,
Cochin is playing as well. Yes.
Dion Prestia is allegedly a chance to play, so it's frightening for if you're an Adelaide fan, but all seems to be going pretty well at Tigerland at the moment.
Yeah, it usually happens when... It's one of those... The old saying is that when things go your way, they go your way, but when they don't, they don't.
Yeah, 100%.
It's going to be an interesting game. You know,
who's your tip?
It's going to be... Adelaide don't want to go 0-2. I still have them as a lock-in for the 8, maybe a lock-in for the premiership. They don't want to go 0-2, and they don't want to lose in Adelaide.
Well, Adelaide beat Richmond... It was round 6 last year. They beat them by 76 points, and that was like the one or two wallopings that Richmond copped for the year. So I could see an upset brewing here, and I think it would be a huge statement. Adelaide were obviously in the news this week for their preseason cult-like training camp. And Tex Walker was pretty upset that got leaked to the media, but I think it would be a huge statement if they come out.
I'm going to say this now. I love Tex Walker.
Okay.
People,
Tex Walker, if you're listening, you have a fan.
People love their club. And I think Tex Walker takes it to another level.
Yeah.
There is passion that Tex Walker shows for Adelaide that most players don't show for their club.
Bob Murphy showed it, but I
love Bob Murphy. I've never seen Bob Murphy get mad because someone criticised his club.
Yeah, but yeah, different kind of mannerism, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I think Tex Walker, and good for him for being captain still. I hope he plays because they need him to play. Jenkins struggled again.
Yep.
You'd safe to say he's kind of on the wind down of his career, especially with Fogarty, who played fantastic against Essendon.
True.
He ran out of legs in the end, but he played good. He started off strong.
Kicked that goal from like 55 out, which was pretty impressive. He just marked it and he went back and you knew that he was going to go back and he knew he could make the distance.
What a good confidence builder. Kick him off from outside 50 with your first kick.
Yeah, outstanding.
It is what you need. I have Richmond. I do have Richmond. I think LA's still too injured and... They could pull the Sydney and go 6-0 and then make finals.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's easy to downplay the effect that finishing the season later has on the team. So Adelaide, they played in the grand final. They then started preseason a lot later than other teams. So I can see Adelaide going 2-0. Zip and 2 in the first 2 rounds. Fast news. Liam hit us with the first headline.
Okay, Brisbane Broncos, St. George Illawarra, Sydney and New Zealand are the four teams that's been announced as the Women's Rugby League. No start date yet, but it will commence on the same day as the NRL Grand Final.
Boom. Next headline is the Socceroos overnight drew 0-0 with Colombia and keeper Vucevic saved a very late penalty, which was very impressive.
Beautiful. Benson has become the third NBA rookie in history to score 1,000 points, 500 rebounds, and 500 assists. And I think it's safe to say, if you don't go for the Philly, if you're Australian, you don't go for the Philadelphia 76ers, they must be your second favourite team.
Correct. And that is our wrap-up all done. We've run out of time, but make sure you tune in next on Friday before where's Neve and Michael preview all a massive weekend. I'm stuffing up my words. They preview a massive weekend of sport, and you can obviously catch all of this show on podcast. Check out the Sports Desk on Omni, iTunes, whatever you want to use. You can find it. But yeah, thanks so much, Liam. It's been a pleasure.
Yes, catch you next week.
See you next week.